today on the Beginner Photography Podcast.
It made it really hard and it was super annoying. And I take some shots that look beautiful, play them back on the screen. I'm like, yes, I got the shot. And then I zoom into it and the eyes are just like, I get the tip of the nose in focus or, you know, the background. I'm just like, oh, I just want to give up.
Welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast. Today, we're making photography simple. So let's get into it.
Welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast, a weekly podcast for those who believe that moments matter most and that a beautiful photo is more than just a sum of its settings. A show for those who want to do more with the gear they have to take better photos today. And now, your host, Raymond Hatfield.
Hey, everybody. Raymond here from the Beginner Photography Podcast. As always, I am happy to be hanging out with you today. All of my photo friends, this community that we got going on, you know, within the Beginner Photography Podcast is something that over the years I've truly, truly grown to love and appreciate and enjoy spending time with you all and helping you out when it comes to, you know, learning photography and anything that, you are looking to learn and help you progress your skills. So the fact that you continue to show up week after week, I just have to say thank you so much for your love and your support of the show. So today we are talking with a, you know, there's a really good chance you know who today's guest is. It is Miguel Quiles, and he has a very popular YouTube channel where he is also educating photographers in all sorts of things. He is a portrait photographer by profession, and he shares a lot of interesting tips and tricks and tools that you can use as a portrait photographer and just capturing better photos. One reason why I reached out to Miguel is that he's just, you know, you watch his YouTube videos and you're like, this dude's really down to earth and is also very knowledgeable about photography. And what I loved about this is that it was great that, you know, he really is that person. You know, it's not a show or anything when you see him on YouTube. It is exactly how he is in real life by talking to him. So this is a really great episode. I truly enjoyed it. And I know that you will too, because we're going to talk a lot about, you know, photography, getting started in photography, those earliest struggles that you have in photography that Miguel had and kind of how he overcame them. And then also, not only is he a, you know, has a big YouTube following, a very popular YouTube channel, but also, I mean, he's a professional photographer, so he's got to make money as well with his photography. So today I dialed it back and I wanted to know about kind of those earliest days in his beginnings in photography, specifically how to deal with exposure. You know, oftentimes a brand may reach out and say, if you do these photos for us, we'll give you exposure. So kind of how to navigate that world, what you can do with that, how to determine what opportunity is going to be a good opportunity, what you can do after the shoot to actually, you know, make money yourself. And then even how to word agreements that you have before a shoot to set yourself up for, you know, potential shoots there in the future. And then, of course, you know, what sorts of things Miguel sees or did that also sabotaged his own sales. So with that, again, let's get on into this interview with Miguel Quiles. You are, you know, obviously you're a portrait photographer, you're an educator, you have a lot of things going on, and you have a very sizable YouTube audience as well. And I think one thing that makes you stand out among other photography educators on YouTube is that not only do you have the experience, but you have this way of breaking down what are sometimes complex situations into something that just about any photographer can understand. And I think that a lot of photographers really value that experience. I can hear that in your voice. But, you know, as another photographer, I know that this didn't happen overnight. You didn't like wake up one day, you had the camera, you had all the knowledge. This started sooner than that. So before we get to where you are today, can we talk about kind of those early days in photography and how you even got started in the first place?
For sure. So I actually got started in photography. And by the way, thank you for that. That's definitely something that I'm very mindful of when I create content and whenever I try to teach other people photography. But really it started for me when I, like right out of high school, you know, I wasn't big into photography growing up, as a youngster. I basically started in photography right out of high school, started working at the retail store. It was a consumer electronics store that happened to sell photography and video equipment. And we were commission based. So in the store, the things that we would get paid the most on or have the most opportunity to make money in general was with photography. Because obviously, if you come in to buy a DVD player, you buy a DVD player and you're out the door, versus you come in to buy a camera and you're buying a camera body, a lens, filters, batteries, memory cards, film, you know, flashes, all kinds of stuff. So there was just a lot more opportunity to make money at that time. And so I'm very simplistic when I learn things. I'm not that guy that, you know, hears very technical stuff and retains it. I have to really kind of water things down a little bit for me to understand it. And so that's kind of what I did. I watered down the whole process of photography so that I could understand it. And then as people would come in looking to start and buy their first camera, buy their first lens, buy their first flash, you'd have to have conversations with them to help them understand why they needed these things. And so I learned really early on to really just explain things in a very simple way so that obviously at that time, so that I could make money, you know, selling those cameras and accessories, because if they didn't understand what the purpose was, they would never buy it. And oftentimes they needed these things based on what they were telling me, the use cases that they had, they needed some of these things. And it was really important for me to make sure that I didn't mess that up for them, you know, and tell them things in a really complex way to where they're like, yeah, that raises a lot more questions. Let me come back. And then they don't. And then they go, they continue on and they take terrible pictures. And then it's my fault, or at least I felt that way. So that was really my thing. And then as I started my career in photography, this was, so we're talking from 1999 is when I started. And then going to 2011 is when I started to pursue this professionally. And I had some knowledge, I had some experience with taking photos, but I would not put myself anywhere in the category of being a professional, but I was just getting things going. And I realized as I looked at the industry at that point, trying to figure out, okay, how do I learn photography where I'm at right now? Who do I go to? Where do I go? And I would see some of the resources that were available at the time. And a lot of the resources tend to talk about photography in terms that are so magical and so mystical. And so, you know, like they just perform this complex brain surgery, you know, and doing it in such a way where it's like, well, I did this and you're probably not going to be able to do this, but I'm just going to show you anyway. And I don't know, I would watch some of these things and go to some of these workshops and listen to these lectures. And it just sounded very pretentious and it bugged me. And I said, you know, if I ever get to the point to where I know a thing or two, I want to be able to be that resource for other people that I could, like that I wanted for myself when I started. And so that's really where the journey started, was trying to learn photography. And then also, if I decided to go the route of teaching people, that I would be that resource that made things as easy as possible to digest. I don't want someone to look at what I do and be like, oh my gosh, he's so magical and mystical and I could never do what he does and he's just amazing. Like, I would rather you look and be like, wow, that he made that look really easy. I think I could do that too. You know, that's like the best, to me, in a strange way, that's like the best compliment, you know, like you make things look really easy. Like I could do it too. And people can, you know, and that's what I try. And I try to make sure that I explain things in a way that people can do just that.
Yeah. It seems like, you know, 99, 2000, 2005, 6, you know, when there wasn't YouTube, when there wasn't a lot of information readily available, it's like photographers kind of had to guard themselves and their quote unquote, like industry secrets for how to get a great photo. Whereas today, like there is a lot of information available, but there is still some of that air of like, well, I'm doing it this way, and therefore, you know, it does kind of feel magical. And I never really had thought about it that way until you broke it down. I think, once again, it's just a testament to your ability to do that, kind of get people to think differently. But I want to go back to when you were, you know, selling camera gear. You said that you wanted to learn as much as you could about the photography so that you could recommend, you know, the right products and whatnot. Were you actively shooting at this time, or were you just reading the literature? Hey, Raymond here. If you're sometimes baffled by which camera settings to use, then I've got just the thing for you. My free guide, Picture Perfect Camera Settings. It's a fantastic starting point for anybody eager to understand the basics of camera settings in various shooting scenarios. And it's tailored to beginners who want to get out of auto mode, providing clear, easy-to-follow suggestions on where to start with your settings. So whether you're capturing a stunning landscape or a family portrait, Picture Perfect Camera Settings will help you to get off of automatic mode and explore the possibilities your camera offers. Remember, mastering photography settings is a journey, and this guide is your first step and the perfect resource to guide you towards finding the right settings for your style. So grab your copy today at perfectcamerasettings.com and start your journey to better photos.
I was definitely an active shooter. I was really big into the car club scene at that point in time. So I spent a lot of money on my car, you know, buying rims and body kits and car audio and going to car shows and car meetups and things of that nature. So, and I had a lot of friends who had really nice cars as well. So I would take my camera and basically go to these meetups and try to take the best car photos that I could take. You know, I would see all these amazing vehicles and I'm trying to like find cool angles to make their cars look really awesome and just kind of doing it as a hobby, you know, photographing models at these car tuner events and stuff like that, which was like the easiest thing in the world because they just basically sit on the car. It's like you really don't do much. It's like beautiful car, beautiful model. They sit on the hood or they sit on the door, look pretty. You take a couple snaps, thank you, and you kind of just move on. And so I did a lot of that, and then ultimately just kind of took my camera with me everywhere and just started taking pictures everywhere, you know, going out on the weekends with friends and not just taking pictures, but also shooting video. I would take little mini DV camcorder and we'd go to the skating rink with friends and I'd be the guy who can't really ice skate for anything, but I'm out there with, you know, my camcorder trying to like hobble on the ice, trying to keep up with my friends and shooting video. And I still have a lot of those mini DV tapes. I need to get those things transferred over.
Yeah, you do.
I feel like there's some gold in there somewhere. but yeah, so that was kind of my thing starting out, was just like, in order for you to really be a resource, or at least I felt this at the time, to be a resource to my customers that were coming in who, you know, had very real world use cases for these cameras, I needed to take these same pieces of equipment out into the real world, test them out, figure out what works, what doesn't work. And it made me a valuable asset to the team because most of the people that were there, the other sales reps that were there, they had experience with this equipment, but they weren't actively using it. So a lot of what they were saying, to be honest, was like made up BS, you know? They'd say, oh yeah, this weekend I had the same situation and I bought this $5,000 camera and it took care of everything. And meanwhile, I'm just sitting there like, but you don't really need that though. Why are you saying that? You didn't take a camera out this weekend. You were watching a football game. Like, don't lie to these people. So.
But looking for that commission, I can see that happening a lot. I mean, that's kind of where the term like sleazy salesperson comes from. And I think that's a lot of people, as like new photographers, get burned from that because we're sold that the better the camera, the better the photos that we're going to be taking.
True.
And as you said, you know, that's obviously not always the case. But gear is still something that a lot of photographers have questions about. They don't know too much about. They're looking for guidance. And you yourself, you're a Sony artisan, correct?
Yes. Yes, indeed. Yes. I've been fortunate to be a Sony ambassador, a Sony artisan since 2015. So almost 6 years. I think April or May will make 6 years.
Well, congratulations.
Still can't believe it.
Yeah,
thank you.
That's
crazy.
That's amazing. So I'm really interested to hear your perspective as an artisan who obviously, you know, you want to use the best gear that you need to do the job, but mm-hmm. also there's this kind of dichotomy because we both know that, you know, the better the camera isn't going to make the best photo, and that a great photo is more than the sum of its settings. So mm-hmm. can you talk about kind of that balance there a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that it's a really tricky, I don't know, it's like it's a bit of a paradox, because on the one hand, when you start out, you kind of just start out with what you have and you do the best that you can do. And you start to realize as you use kind of like basic equipment after some period of time, you start to learn what the limitations are and you learn how to overcome those limitations. But then at some point, when you start to really like find your stride and you start to get better, maybe you start making a little bit of money out of photography, you get to the point where you're like, why am I making myself go through this when I could just buy something else that works better? And so, you know, I could see where somebody who's starting out would look at that person and be like, you know, oh, well, you know, you're relying a lot on the gear. You could do the same thing with something cheaper, and you can, you know, but it's just like cars. Like I look at photography and cameras and gear, just like cars, being that I was a car guy back in the day. And it's like, you can get from point A to point B with a skateboard, or you can get to point A from point A to point B with a Lambo. You know, they both do the job. One does it in a completely different way than the other. One isn't better than the other. You know, I would enjoy riding a skateboard over to the corner store, but I'm pretty sure I would enjoy it in a Lambo as well. So, you know, the experience is different. And I think that as you progress in photography and as you get better and as you start potentially making it into a professional career, it becomes more important for you to be able to reduce the friction that can happen between you and your equipment when you're taking photos. Because if you do that, then you have the ability to focus on other things that truly are more important than the gear and the settings and all that kind of stuff. You know, being a portrait guy, like I'm working with people all the time, not just with the clients, but sometimes working with hairstylists, makeup artists, you know, videographer, like there's a bunch of other people that are on set that have to be looked after, you know, and talked to and motivated and encouraged and, you know, whatever. And I'm not able to do that if I'm using equipment that is drawing time and attention away. So, you know, so I think that if you're starting out, and even if you're into it for a few years, you know, you can get a lot of mileage out of beginner entry-level stuff. But I think that as you find success and as you start making money, you kind of owe it not just to yourself, but you owe it to your clients to make sure that you have gear that just gets out of the way, you know? And that's, for me, what it's all about. Like, as I've upgraded lighting and lenses and, you know, bought like special gear over the years, it's all really been less about like, oh, this gear is so awesome. And it's more of like, I don't have to worry about this. And now I could focus on the person and talking to them and getting them hyped up about the shoot, because those are the things that are going to get, it's going to result in better photographs, is really developing those relationships. And so that's kind of where the gear thing is for me nowadays.
Yeah. Especially where, you know, as time goes on every year, we have like such better and better cameras. I was talking to somebody just the other day who was worried about like grain in their images. And I said, mm-hmm. I legitimately don't think that in like 4 years, we're going to be talking about grain anymore, because no matter what camera you buy, it's just going to be like so good. There's going to be some sort of computational photography that's going to take care of issues like that, that that's going to become a non-issue. But when you had started back, you know, even in 2011, I mean, was that the, like the T3i, the like that mm-hmm. series of cameras, right?
Yep. That was the first one I started with.
Oh, well then perfect. So then
yep.
What were, you know, when you got that camera, what were kind of those technical limitations that you had to overcome? Because I'm sure before that, everybody's just shooting in auto, you know, you just kind of do snapshots, disposable cameras, things like that. Was that you, or did you already have a really solid technical understanding of photography?
No, I would say I was more at that point in time an auto shooter. I had a little tiny bit of an eye for composition, had way more in terms of social skills to be able to talk to people and get them comfortable in front of the camera. But then behind the camera, I definitely had a lot of technical and artistic growth to be experienced. But I think for me, you know, I started out with a Canon Rebel T3i. That was my first camera. Back then at that point, I would spend a lot of time playing Magic the Gathering. I actually had fancied myself as an aspiring professional Magic the Gathering player and would go to tournaments and, you know, thought that's what I wanted to do. And then just kind of like one day was looking around like, okay, I don't know that this is a professional environment when I'm sitting at a store playing with like a bunch of people with their butt cracks hanging out, you know, just didn't feel like, it didn't feel like a legitimate thing. And so I sold my cards, bought a T3i, and I didn't really understand what the limitations were because I didn't know about photography enough to make those decisions. But I took a workshop really early on. Might have even been like a Groupon thing where they were like, yeah, go for this all day workshop. And it was like 60 or 70 bucks and we'll teach you how to shoot in manual mode. And sure enough, it worked. And I learned how to shoot in manual mode. And shortly after that, and I mean like within a week or two, I realized like, okay, this T3i has some shortcomings, mainly being that it didn't have a lot of focus points. So there were times where I was trying to take photographs that, you know, portraits and things of that nature, and they were coming out of focus. And that was really super annoying. So Fortunately, I was still within the return policy, went back to the store, and they had the 60D on sale that had the better kit lens, and it was like a $250 difference or something. So I immediately returned it, got the 60D, and then started using that, you know, and had still had some limitations, but I had a little less than what I had with the T3i. And so really, it was just a matter of just the focus points, you know, not really being plentiful for me to be able to compose the shots in a way that would make it easy to get shots in focus. And then having shutter speeds that were like, I think the T3i was like 1/4000 or 1/5000th of a second was like the max. And you'd be shooting outdoors with that. I call it the Cracker Jack lens, that 50 millimeter 1.8 that feels like, you know, it's the plastic fantastic. And, you know, and I would go out and shoot with this thing. And yeah, there was just a lot of times where I'm like, man, this gear is not getting me to where I want to get to. And so those are really the main reasons why. Just lack of, there weren't enough focus points, and it just made getting the eyes in focus, which I was told at that time was exceedingly important in portrait photography. It made it really hard and it was super annoying. And I take some shots that look beautiful, play them back on the screen. I'm like, yes, I got the shot. And then I zoom into it and the eyes are just like, I get the tip of the nose in focus or, you know, the background. I'm just like, oh, I just want to give up.
Yeah. Hey, Raymond here, and we're going to get back to today's show in just a moment. But let me ask you, do you feel like your photos have become a bit stale recently? Do you feel like if maybe you were shooting more, your photos would be better, but you're not sure what to shoot? Well, don't let your photography grow old and stale. Kickstart your creativity by trying just one of the 46 creative photo ideas in my free ebook that you can download right now over at creativeimageideas.com and bring some spice back into your images. Or, I mean, you could just continue to let your camera collect dust. I mean, the choice is yours. But deep down, I think that you know the answer. So again, download your free copy of my free ebook, 46 Creative Photo Ideas, over at creativeimageideas.com. That's creativeimageideas.com. Now, let's get back to today's interview. I think a lot of people are going to, you know, relate to that as well, because it's hard when you first get started to you know, not only understand the technicals because you got so many new things to think about, but also have to worry about your focus point and where it's at and, you know, why is it not doing these things? But it sounds to me like within that very short amount of time, you went from knowing a little bit about photography to knowing a great deal about the technical side of photography. Today, do you consider yourself, you know, now that you've been doing this for, you know, quite a number of years, do you consider yourself more of a technical photographer? Like, is that where your brain goes, or is it more of that artistic side?
I still consider myself more of a technical photographer, but, you know, but I say that, and I don't say it in such a way to mean that, like, I'm a technician, you know, like, I'm not saying it in that way. I'm saying my brain is wired more towards the technical side of imagery. But, you know, also, on the other side of the coin, like, I'm very much a student. So, like, I'm very much, like, I've met a lot of people who have been doing this for a long time, and a lot of people who really kind of, like, they're feeling themselves, you know? And I'm the type of person, like, I'm very technical, but at the same time, I'm very, like, I'm very curious, and I'm very much a student, and I'm always trying to learn, always trying to get better. You know, I always feel like every photo shoot that, you know, comes in the future, that I'm always, like, improving, and I'm always doing better. And, you know, so that's kind of where my mentality is. I'm definitely more technically minded, but at the same time, it's paired with this student-like curiosity, you know, where I always want to learn more. I want to learn different perspectives, different ways of doing things, just so that I can improve my own technique moving forward.
Do you have an example of a recent example of where you showed up to a shoot feeling good and, you know, you just came at it with that curiosity type mindset and you learned something new?
Yeah. I mean, I had a photo shoot this weekend, actually. I was doing a Sony virtual event. It was a B Alpha event. And I was doing a live photo shoot with the new Sony A1. And there was very little in terms of preparation for this shoot. I really wanted to approach the photo shoot in such a way where it wasn't super planned out. You know, I told the makeup artist and the hairstylist to kind of just do their thing. And it was very similar to how it was when I first started in photography, because I didn't really know. I know what to tell them now in terms of, like, what I want. But when I first started, I didn't. And they would come in and I would say, I don't know, just make them look good. And you know, and then the model would show up with whatever they brought, and they're like, oh, what do you want to go with? And I'm like, whatever makes you feel good, you know, whatever makes you, because when you get in front of the camera, if you're wearing something that you don't like, then obviously that's going to show. So which one of these outfits make you feel your best? Let's go with that one. And then it would be more a thing of me just trying to figure things out. And so that's very similar to what happened this weekend. You know, I'm kind of busy with preparing, you know, the technical portion of this live stream and all that. And hairstylist, makeup artist did their thing. Model just kind of got ready. And I'm thinking, okay, so I want to do something with flowers, but I don't necessarily know what I want to do. And, you know, like many things in life, you just start working through it. You throw something up against the wall and you say, okay, is this going to work? And either it works or it doesn't. And if it doesn't work, you pivot and you try something different. And I don't know, for me, fortunately, I felt like the photos came out really nice. And I felt like the instruction was accessible to hopefully the people that were watching. But yeah, I mean, that happens all the time. I mean, I feel like it's a common thing that every photo shoot, you try to extend yourself and do something a little different, and you just try it out. And if it works, great, you keep going. And if it doesn't work, then you just pivot and try something different. Or maybe you fall back on what you do best, you know, what comes to be second nature for you. And that's okay too. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of what we do as photographers, right? Like we have an idea of, like, where we want to go with things. And then you just pivot when it doesn't work out.
Did you have a backup plan for this? Like, if the flower idea that you had didn't work, would you have done something different with the flowers, or would you have resulted back to what it is that you do best?
Yeah, I definitely would have gone back to, like, what I felt most comfortable doing. I'd be like, okay, let's just go back to that most basic of portraiture, you know, and really just focus on mood and feeling and expressions. And, you know, and maybe I would have reincorporated those flowers at that point, but that's typically what I do. You know, I if I have a new idea, I'll go ahead and explore that idea. And if I feel like it's not working, then maybe I put a pause on it. I may not completely just kill the idea altogether. I'll just say, okay, let's put the flowers down for a second. Let's just focus on like getting me getting warmed up, you getting warmed up with your expressions, and then we'll just reincorporate the flowers. And I'm not telling him that, but that's the mindset. That's kind of where I'm, where my mind is going, and we just kind of work through it.
Yeah, of course. So with having gone from, you know, we all know that some of our earliest photos like aren't our best, you know, but today you have a voice, you have a style of photo that you go after. So when I asked you there, you know, would you go back to what it is that you do best? I could see in your body language just kind of got more comfortable, you know, when we go back to that. So could you maybe explain to me a little bit more about what are the maybe two or three elements that go into one of your photos that make it uniquely you? Like, what do you go after every time you have somebody come in front of the camera? There are two ways to bring home more money with your photography business. You either get more clients or you spend less of the money that you make. CloudSpot Studio helps you keep more of what you earn. With the lowest payment processing fees in the industry, the average photographer will save $300 annually. And that's just more money to invest in essential gear like a new flash or a sweet camera bag. You know, one that is perfect for storing all of the wedding day snacks that you can pack. But it's not just about savings. CloudSpot Studio is designed to streamline your workflow. Easily organize shoots, send contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and you're really going to enjoy the hassle-free payments. So sign up for a free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com. And as a bonus, you're going to get access to my exclusive wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires at no additional cost. Why let fees chip away at your profits? Empower your photo journey with CloudSpot and watch your business soar.
It's a great question. I mean, I would say the two things that I look for is good lighting. Definitely is going to be the big thing. And then secondarily, somebody who is, that's the word I'm looking for, malleable, I guess, in front of the camera, you know, somebody who is comfortable enough to be able to explore a wide range of emotions to give me the best opportunity to photograph them and make them look awesome. And so, you know, that could be there and that could be great. And you could have somebody who's in front of the camera who's just killing it and making it really easy for me to take a great portrait of them. But if the lighting's not on point and I'm not shooting them in the best light to really kind of flatter those, flatter whatever it is that they're doing and whatever they're giving to me as a photographer, then, you know, that's where it's a balance. Like, I try to make sure the lighting looks great and that the person is not just a dud in front of the camera. You know, they're not just a lump on a log. Like, even to some extent, I feel like a lot of other things are forgiven so long as those two things are there. You know, you can almost be forgiven for a shot that's a little bit out of focus if the lighting is great and the expression is killer. But I feel like if those two things are lacking, you could have everything else like spot on. You know, you mentioned grain earlier, like you could have a shot that's, you know, a little bit grainy, but if the lighting's good and the expression is killer or the pose is great, like you have a good shot. People will just be like, oh yeah, it's a beautiful shot. It's got character. It's got grit, right? You know, versus like, you know, it could be the sharpest photo in the world with some really poor lighting and a bad expression. And it's like,
who cares?
Try again.
Yeah.
Yep. Try again next time.
That's too funny. I've told this on the podcast several times before, but the first wedding that I had shot on my own, I was so obsessed with like the technicals that I shot that first dance at ISO 100 just to give it that best grain. No light, just like party lights. And every photo was an exposure of like half a second. I mean, it was just terrible. Wow. They didn't.
It's just a wedding of ghosts.
That's exactly what it was, you know, and they ended up using a cell phone photo. Now, this is from 2012, a cell phone photo of that first dance as like their profile picture. And I remember thinking, like, at that moment, I was like, technicals do not matter when, like, in a situation like this, where, like, this is all about the moment. And that really helped me kind of get over it, kind of, you know, in that same situation. So let's go ahead and switch gears here a little bit, because I know that you've been a professional photographer for a while. And I want to talk a little bit more about the business side. Mm-hmm. Coming from the perspective of new photographers, you know, we get a lot of inquiries for exposure, essentially, right? You know, like, mm-hmm. hey, come do this, shoot it for us for free. We're not going to pay you anything, but guess what? Maybe we have a sizable Instagram or something like that, and we're going to talk about you on our Instagram. And these mm-hmm. deals, you know, we all know that exposure, all exposure is not equal. You know, exposure from one brand is going to be different from somebody else. So can you talk to me about how do we know if the exposure that we're being promised is actually worth anything?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I would say 9 times out of 10, the exposure is worth little to nothing. And for that 10% of the time where it is worth it, it's more important that you know what to do with it than anything else. Exposure in and of itself is not going to do anything for you. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to do anything for you that you couldn't do for yourself. So there's plenty of opportunities. For me, I would say that I would look at inquiries and I would look at potential offers to do work. And I would look at it if they were to tell me, oh, you know, Miguel, it's going to be great exposure. This will be something that will put you in front of all these people. Like, I wouldn't necessarily be thinking of it from a social media exposure perspective, because I don't think that's worth it's extremely overvalued, I think, in these days. But if I get the opportunity to rub shoulders with important people through a gig or through a process where, you know, maybe I'm working with somebody who, may have a budget in the future to be able to do something, you know, then that's something you could do. Kind of like an agreement with these people, like maybe they'll tell you, okay, we're going to do this for exposure right now. We'll have other opportunities where you can make money in the future. It's like, okay, well, let's talk about those opportunities. What do those opportunities look like? And maybe it's a situation where, you know, you do something for, and I'm using air quotes for exposure, but you know, we've worked it out to where, hey, they have this event coming up in a month or two. And if I do a great job for them here, then we can have that conversation and we can know exactly, okay, well, when we do that job, just so you know, these are what my rates are. And, you know, even sometimes that might not work, to be honest, because I think once you've devalued yourself to do something for exposure, it's really hard. You know, I liken a lot of this stuff to relationships. It's like, you know, if you're willing to kiss on the first date, it's like, it's really hard that second and third date, you know, to be like, no, I don't do that type of thing. It's like, what are you talking about? We kiss on the first date. What's this, you know? And so you have to have respect for yourself as an individual, as a creative, as an artist, as a business person, and limit the times where you have to work for so-called exposure. If you're trying to learn your craft and things like that, I would even still say you're better off practicing and doing it under your own terms with less, you know, stress and pressure to have to deliver for anybody, and get to the point to where you don't have to do things for exposure, because it honestly is, like I say, it's very overvalued these days. And if we keep taking work for exposure, then this industry is not going to be there anymore. You know, mm-hmm. people will just come to really just expect people to work for free. And there's no other, I don't know, there's no other industries out there where people are willing to put their time and talent and for the potential to make money in the future. Like, it's insane. Like, I don't know. I don't see this in other places. And so we just have to think a little bit better, and we have to be more creative about how we utilize these opportunities that are given to us to try to make money in the future.
Okay. So let's go two different directions here. One, because I know that there are plenty of photographers who, when just starting out, are excited to kind of jump at that opportunity. So mm-hmm. I liked that that agreement idea that you had, you know, like, well, in the future, let's do this. So I guess my first question is there anything else that we could do maybe with those photos afterwards? And then the second part of the question is if we should be avoiding working for exposure almost at all costs, what other ways can we go about getting that first client?
Yeah, it's a good question. I would say that as far as like getting your first client, you have to keep in mind. So let's say if you took that exposure opportunity and you get those images from that exposure opportunity, what would you do? Well, maybe you'd take those images, post them on your website. Maybe you would post them on Instagram. You'd post them on Facebook. Hey, look at me. Look at what I did. Book me. I'll do the same for you, right? Well, you have to look at it and be a little bit more objective, because what you did for them, you might be able to do it to some scale or some extent on your own, right? Unless it's something where like you're photographing like a VIP gala where like, you know, Elon Musk and Bill Gates are going to be there. Like, that's a hard one for you to try to recreate and take photos mm-hmm. of like famous people. But most situations that you'll run into, you could set up your own test shoots. You could set up your own styled shoots that you put your own time and your own effort and your own money into. And you don't have the pressure of having to deliver to someone else. Because uh-huh. the other thing that can happen very often and very quickly is that you do this work for exposure for somebody else, and you're thinking, oh, I'm going to get all these great images that I could turn around and use to market my business. But then maybe something goes wrong. Maybe you do a bad job. Maybe you say something in that job that somebody doesn't like, and all of a sudden you have the photos, but then they say, well, we really didn't like the way that you worked or the way you did this, this, and this, and we really don't like the idea of you using the photos to market yourself because we don't like you. Right. So that's where I say that it's very important. And oftentimes you could just shoot your own stuff, you know, depending on what kind of photography you're into, shoot your own stuff. And you don't have to tell the public that you weren't paid for that work. Right. Like when I started out, I used to do 3 or 4 photo shoots every single week because I was trying to learn. I was trying to hone my craft, learn lighting, learn posing. From, you know, A to Z. And I would post these images online, and I would never, ever in a million years tell people, hey, I did this photo shoot for free. Take a look at what I did. Yeah. You know, it was always like, hey, check out this photo shoot that I did with, you know, fill in the blank for this company or this person. And the implication was that I was doing it for pay. But the reality is that maybe 80 or 90% of those shoots were free. They were tests. They were shoots that I set up, or they were shoots that they reached out to me and, you know, they didn't promise exposure or anything like that, but they're like, hey, I'll work with you and we'll get some good photos. And then I turn around and I use those photos to market my skills and market what it is that I like to do. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like, in the beginning, it's really easy for beginners to want to take that low hanging fruit because they're offering them this opportunity and it's like just there before them and all they have to do is just show up and take those pictures. But the reality is that there's so much more on the back end. There's expectations now that those people are going to have regardless of the fact. And the worst part is, and this has been the reality, and for those that are listening that are beginners, if this hasn't happened to you, it will. But when you're working with somebody for exposure and they have no skin in the game, they often are the most pain in the neck people that you will ever work with. They want the entire world and then some. And meanwhile, you're just like, you're not even paying me. Mm-hmm. And you want all of this. Like I already spent, maybe you were there for 8 or 9 hours shooting a wedding, you know, and you're breaking your back. You brought all your gear. You deliver 1,000 photos, you know, like more photos than what anybody should ever get for a wedding. And then they're like, oh, only 1,000. I was expecting like 10,000 photos. You were there for 8 hours. You know what I mean? Like obnoxious stuff like that. That would never happen if you were working with somebody who was paying you for your time and your talent. And so that takes the wind out of your sails when you're starting out too. So I don't know if that directly answers the question, But
no, it does. It really does, because I think that, you know, when we think about, as you said there, you know, it's the kind of that low hanging fruit. It sounds very cool. I'm going to be working mm-hmm. with somebody. This is going to be great. But then you brought up something that, you know, I don't know why I didn't even think about this. It's like typically those shoots, you can easily replicate yourself. They're going to be things mm-hmm. like, I don't know, maybe like a small makeup company or a small like clothing company where you're just photographing clothes or makeup.
Right.
Like both of those things you could get at Target for relatively cheap.
Sure.
So why not just go at it on your own and not have to deal with the expectation and the oh, well, we were hoping for this, and can you make this happen? And possibly even being asked to do something outside of your experience level and then
sure.
being judged on that photo, even though this was like a free gig. So yeah, that 100% answered my question. So I guess branching off of that, the next step would be, okay, so we're not going to, you know, go that route and just do try to get every gig for exposure. We're going to try something at home. Somebody's going to listen to this. They're going to go to Target. They're going to buy a bottle of vitamin water or mascara or something like that, and they're going to try mm-hmm. something at home. They're going to use those photos to reach out to a similar company. That company is going to be like, hey, these photos are great. We'd love to work with you. Next question is pricing. You know, this mm-hmm. is something that, you know, I really don't have any sort of knowledge in when it comes to working with brands or marketing material or anything like that. Where do we start?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I always have a very kind of like funny answer when it comes to like pricing. You charge as much as you can possibly charge. You know, I you guys can look this up online, but there was a photograph that was sold for like millions of dollars, and it was a photograph of
a potato
on a black
yes.
background.
Yeah.
And you know, I think to myself, like,
what?
Who would ever pay for something like that? But
yeah.
it had to do with the artist who took it, you know, and kind of the story behind it. And, you know, this person rubbed shoulders with, you know, Silicon Valley and millionaires and billionaires. And so anything that person produced was going to have some intrinsic value, even if it was just a picture of a potato on a black background. So when it comes to pricing, though, you know, the general overarching rule for me is to charge as much as humanly possible to cover what is going to happen, what the expected deliverables are, but also to pay for unexpected things, you know, pay for situations where like maybe you go to shoot an event and, you know, you end up having to pay for parking. Or maybe you go to shoot an event and like I shot this event one time, I parked and thought it was, you know, perfectly fine parking space to park at. And I come out and my car was towed.
Oh,
and,
no.
You know, $285 later, you know, going to their little lot where they take your cars, you know, like I charge for all of those incidentals, things, crazy things that could happen, you know. And so that's kind of the overarching thing, right? But then to kind of dial it in just a little bit better, you know, you look at what your local competition charges as well, you know, and I look to see, okay, if they were to not go with me, if they went with, let's say, the next three best options for them in this market, what level of quality are they getting? Is it as good as mine? Is it better than mine? Is it less than mine? Well, if the one that maybe might be better than you, what are they charging, you know, and looking to see, okay, well, maybe they're charging $1,000 for their session and you were thinking of charging them a couple $100. Well, let's see what the second best. Oh, well, I'm actually, my quality is a little better than the second best. They're charging $500. Well, best in the market charges $1,000. Second is $500. Maybe the third might be $375. You know, but I could tell my work is better than numbers two and three. So maybe I should come in at $750, mm-hmm. you know, or maybe I come in at $995. You know what I mean? Like, so you have to look and see. And the other thing, too, is it's really less about how much you charge. And it's more about how much value you're providing to that client. You know, at the end of the day, what you bring to the table is what only you can bring to the table. whether it be your personality, your work ethic, your drive, your skills, your artistic abilities. That's something that there's no other individual, no other single person is going to bring to the table. So you bringing those things to the table has value. How much value do you want to put on it? You know, and understanding what other people in your market are putting on their value propositions kind of helps you to figure out what you can do. But being really honest, for me, those aren't handcuffs for me. It's just data, you know, it's just information that I have that kind of drives, you know, the conversations. Like if I had a conversation with a client and I told them, you know, I charge $1,500 for a headshot session, and they're like, holy cow, you know, this other big name photographer in Orlando only charges $800. And it's like, okay, so what do you tell that person? You know, you have to have a conversation with them. Hey, I understand that individual charges $800 and they take beautiful work. However, I know what I bring to the table. And I know that if you spent that $800 with that person, they're not going to get, you know, as good of an expression out of you as I am. And that's what you're paying for. Just like going from one doctor to the next, you know, you can find a doctor that'll do brain surgery for, you know, a couple thousand dollars, and you'll find someone that'll charge you $500,000, you know. And if you could afford to have that $500,000 brain surgeon, I probably would pay for that.
Right.
So, you know, that's kind of what it's all about. It's like, would you rather waste $800 with a competition getting a photo that you may not be in love with? Or would you rather go with me where I'm going to get a photo that you love, and I'm going to, like, I do it all the time. I photograph the tens of thousands of people at this point. You will be no different. I will get great photos of you. It's just going to cost you $1,500. You know what I mean?
Of course.
So,
yeah.
That's what it's about.
Like, oh geez, I got to get in front of your camera. Like, I don't care about the other competitor at this point. Like you said, I mean, I don't want to waste $800. In the hopes to save a few hundred, you know, whatever, and possibly get something that that I'm not going to be happy with. Yeah, that's real. That's real important. So where
here's another thing, though. Hang on. There's one other big thing here, and I know this is something that a lot of beginners struggle with, and it's something that they do all the time. Understand the fact that if you could afford yourself, that you're priced too low, and so you know you have to really kind of take a step back and understand that just because you may not be willing to spend $1,500 on yourself to be photographed by yourself doesn't mean that other people won't spend that. I find too many people that are kind of pricing themselves out of getting great opportunities and making good money in photography because they're like, oh, I'm not worth that much. And it's like, well, if you think you're not worth that much, then you're definitely not going to make it. But if you feel like you're worth it, and you feel like you can back it up and provide enough value to that client, whether it be in the number of images you deliver, the quality of images you deliver, how you deliver them, you know, all of the above, like don't sell out of your own pockets just because you can't afford yourself. That has nothing to do with how much you end up charging for the services that you provide.
That right there, that is such a hard thing to get over, though. That is such a hard thing for so many photographers to get over. So how do you, is there anything that you do in terms of like imposter syndrome? Because I know like when I had first started, my wife and I, when we got married, we didn't hire a wedding photographer. And the reasoning behind it was, I mean, part of it was probably ego. Like, oh, you know, I'm going to have such like a high standard for my photo that we never ended up doing it. But when I started doing it professionally, oftentimes there'd be, you know, the conversation that we would have together, and it would be, I don't think I can charge this much because, well, I know I wouldn't pay this much for, you know, wedding photography. So there was a bit of an imposter syndrome there. And today my wife is still like blown away. She's like, I can't believe that people, you know, pay you this much to shoot weddings. And I did have to break out of that. I don't know when I did or why I did or how I did or what it was. So I would love to hear, do you have any sort of insight for maybe somebody who's listening who is feeling that?
Yeah. Imposter syndrome never goes away. So, you know, you live with it and you overcome in spite of it. You know, even to this day with everything that I've done, the people I've worked with, the projects I've done, you know, I still struggle with that. But at the end of the day, like, it doesn't matter. You know, that's all like pity, boohoo, you know, it's like, it's those emotional handcuffs and shackles that we choose to put on ourselves that are keeping us from, you know, making the most of this opportunity that we have to take photos. You know, so I think that just embracing the fact, like, it's okay. It's okay if you have that imposter syndrome and you feel like you're not worth it and you feel like your work's not worth it. It's okay, because that's going to happen. You know, there's plenty of times where I've had gigs and I've done jobs for people and for clients and companies where I'm just like, holy cow, I cannot believe they paid that much, you know, and if they knew how much work it took, you know, for me to do that little project that they had, like a simple project that took me like 10 minutes and they paid me tens of thousands of dollars, you know, but it took me a long time to gain the skills and the ability to where I could do that job in 10 minutes, to where the competition might have taken days, hours, weeks, whatever the case might be. So, you know, it's natural to feel like, oh, I can't believe I just charged these people that much money. But you have to separate yourself from that, you know, and I think that's really kind of what it's all about. You have to separate that, you know, that emotion, because it's not going to go away. There's always going to be. And if it doesn't go away, you have other problems, right? Like if you don't have that imposter syndrome and you think that you're, you know, your crap doesn't stink, like you've got another problem. Yeah. You got an ego and that's bound to be deflated at some point, you know, by yourself, by others, by a bunch of other people. So, you know, it's okay. Like I say, it's just one of those things that you embrace and you work through it, you know, and eventually you get to the point to where it's like, you probably laugh about it with friends, you know. I can't believe, man, I had this job this weekend and, you know, I charge them this much to basically work for 10 or 15 minutes. You know, they're like, wow, you made that. Yeah. It was crazy. You know, it's always going to be a thing, but you know, at the same time, like I look at, I don't know, sports athletes, like a basketball player getting paid hundreds of millions of dollars to dribble a ball up and down the court. You know, but the reality is what they do is bigger than that. They entertain people and they bring ratings to the TV stations that broadcast their sports. And if they're really good players that people specifically want to watch them, you know, they can make money through endorsements, through the clothes they wear, the drinks that they drink, the everything, literally everything they do becomes monetized, you know, even though it doesn't directly have to do with what they do on a day-to-day basis. So I don't think this is any different. I mean, photography isn't any different in that respect.
Right. Like that one photographer didn't wake up that one morning who sold this picture of a potato and think to himself like, oh, this is definitely worth $3 million, you know?
I would hope not. I would hope not, because the picture is not all that.
Right. But it goes back to what you were saying there, which is that, you know, if you don't feel imposter syndrome, then you got bigger problems.
Sure.
That is, I think that's something that, you know, so many people who are listening right now are going to feel like in their bones, because, you know, when you first get started on anything, I don't remember where I saw it, but there's like this, it's like a meme, it's like a graph, and it's like everybody's like knowledge of photography. It's like right in the beginning, oh, I don't know anything. Like once they learn what aperture is, it's like all the way up at the top, like, oh, right, I'm a pro. Right. And then once they learn about, you know, inverse square law, it's like, oh, wait, I know nothing. And then it just goes right back down again. And that's kind of like with everything in photography, and especially if you're going to start a business and start charging, and you got to worry about all those things that aren't photography related at all. So that was awesome. Let's talk now about the overall progression to kind of get you to where you are today. You know, earlier I asked, you know, what elements go into a Miguel Quiles photo, right? Like, what are you looking for here? Can you think back to some of those earliest photos and think about them in your head? And like, what were the elements that you saw in those that now today you're like, oh, I would totally do these things different?
I would say the biggest elements were just poor directional lighting. You know, I would look at a photo back then in a holistic manner where I would just kind of look at the photo as a whole and be like, yeah, I like that photo. That looks good. And then now understanding lighting a little bit better, quality of light, you know, direction of light. I will look at some of those photos now and be like, ooh, you know, that lighting was like almost on point, but there's this weird shadow coming off the nose that makes their nose look a little bit bigger than it actually is. Or the lighting's a little bit too high, so they have a lot of light in there or a lot of shadows in their eye sockets, and it's making them look kind of menacing when we're trying to go for a different vibe, you know? So I tend to critique those earlier photos a little bit heavier now, more from a lighting perspective, but also too, the expressions back then, you know, I kind of talked about how I'm very much like a technical person. And when I would take these photos back in the day, if I got something that I thought technically looked great, I'd be patting myself on the back. Mm-hmm. I'm like, it's lit, is exposed right, it's sharp, pat myself on the back. Good job, Miguel. But looking back on those same photos, I'm like, ooh, but that expression though, they're just kind of like they're out to lunch. Mm-hmm. You know, there's nothing going on in between, you know, the lens and the eyes. Like, it's just, there's nothing. And so now that's something that I tend to look for quite a bit in my own photographs, beyond just the technical side being good enough, beyond it being passable. But just like, what is this photo saying to me? What is she saying or he saying to me through their pose, through their expression, through what they're wearing, through the way that it's lit? Is there something more here? Is there more depth to this image than just like a standard picture of a person or a thing, you know? And that's something that back in the day, my brain wouldn't even go there. Like, yeah, it was right. Just very surface level, you know? Like, yeah, it's exposed good, it's sharp, you know, call it a day. So I think that's something that comes with time and with experience. And, you know, hopefully you start to critique your work a little bit more and you try to think, well, what would have made this image better? And for me, that actually comes from me looking at classic great portraits, you know, and great images from the past, from, you know, the legends that came way before us. And, you know, what did they see when they took a photograph? And, you know, we were talking about grainy photographs and stuff like that. I bought a autobiography from Richard Avedon. This thick book. I'm actually looking at it off camera right now. It's probably like a, I don't know, inch and a half, 2-inch thick book of photographs that he's taken. And I was shocked because, you know, Richard Avedon is like a legend. And you look through these photos and there's a bunch of them that are blurry. There's a bunch that are out of focus. There's a bunch that are grainy. You know, and as a artist in 2021, you'd look at those photos and you're just like, man, technically these are not good. but you know, then you realize like, okay, he's Richard Avedon though. And the guy's a legend, and you know, his photos will be remembered long after I'm gone. So, you know, maybe there's something that I could learn here. And when I look at those photographs, what I do see is a lot of heart, and I see a lot of expression, and I see a lot of just more than a shot that's out of focus, more than a shot that's blurry, more than a shot that has the craziest grain of all time. You know, you see something else that's deeper and more impactful, and that's what I want in my images. So
how do you, are these questions that you're asking yourself while you're shooting, like, how can I put more of myself into these images? How can I get more heart out of these images? Or does this come after you're reviewing the photos?
It definitely comes during the process of taking the photo. And it has very little to do with the equipment and the gear and the settings. And it just has more to do with my exploration of the person that I'm photographing and getting them to just like open up. And give the camera whatever that is, you know. I personally am the barrier to making that happen. And whether that's true or not, I don't know. But that's what I put on myself as a photographer. Like, it's up to me to like break that ice and to find that masterpiece, you know, within the person that's in front of the camera. And you know, so I'm very much aware of it. But I'm also aware of the fact that like that's on me, to talk to the person and get them comfortable and get them in a mode to where they're willing to give it to me and where they understand that if they do give it to me, that I'm going to photograph it and I'm going to make them look awesome. And I think that that's the hard part, because there are times where people want to psychologically, emotionally, but they're like, this photographer is not going to capture it anyway, because, you know, it's like, I don't even want to go there because they're just not going to capture it anyway. So I'll just stay in that like first gear, you know, yeah. And meanwhile, I'm trying to push them to get into that second and third and fourth and fifth gear. And it takes a lot of work. You know, I'll go home exhausted emotionally and physically every which way you can think of after a photo shoot, because I'm really trying to get that person to go outside of where they would normally be when they're in front of a camera, because that's what's going to set those images apart from images that other people are going to take. You know, I always, starting out, and I still do this, and I don't tell people this often, but like, when I take photos of people, I genuinely strive to get the best photo of them than they've ever had. And, you know, they'll say, oh, I really love my photos, but what really like speaks to me and makes me happy and know that I did a good job is when I see they change their profile photo on social media, you know, and like, I know, okay. Yeah. And especially if they work with like really great photographers. And then I see that they, you know, chosen my photo to like represent them on social media. I'm like, I got something that these people didn't get, regardless of their skill and talent and everything else. And 9 times out of 10, what that is just that ability to pull something out of them that maybe other people were not able to do.
First of all, I love that you tied in another car analogy there with the first gear all the way up to fifth gear. That was great. I could tell that you're a car guy at heart. Yeah, that was awesome. And second of all, I mean, I think that when you see that somebody uses your photo as their profile picture, and especially like if that is your I guess standard, or that's your gauge to see how well you did during a shoot. That's something awesome to work towards. You know, I don't think that there's anything wrong about that, or, you know, I feel like I can hear people saying like that's a little bit of ego, but I feel like mm-hmm. you have to have some of that as a photographer to have that confidence in yourself to be able to go after it and take it and own it. And that was awesome to hear. Oh my God, I know that I've kept you now longer than I had told you that I would. So I really do appreciate your time today. Before I let you go, can you share with the listeners anywhere and everywhere where they can find and follow you online?
Absolutely. So the best place these days to follow me is through my website, through miguelquiles.com. Through the website, you can get to the other social media portals where I share stuff. I've got a Facebook group, which is Improve Your Photography with Miguel Quiles. So if you just search Improve Your Photography, you'll see the Facebook group pop up. And then if you want to learn photography or learn about gear, equipment, things of that nature, just search me on YouTube. I've got videos on my own YouTube channel. I create videos for the official Sony YouTube channel, which is Alpha Universe. I have videos on Adorama TV. I've got videos all over the place. So if the way that I teach things, if it's simple and basic enough and you enjoy it, then definitely check me out on YouTube, because it's a whole lot more of that.
Clear and concise, man. I'm telling you, Miguel just has this great way of breaking down, you know, sometimes complex, you know, ideas into very simple words that help you truly understand what it is that's going on. And I love, you know, it seems like it really came from his earliest beginnings in photography when he was selling cameras. He had to figure out what was the most important factors and when would you actually use them. And that's it, really. Like, that was the most important thing. And then from there, obviously, it gets branched out, you know. Now, what do I need to do for this shoot? How do I break it down and make this as easy as possible? And of course, he translates that into his education as well, which I am super grateful for. And I know that you are as well. So be sure to check out Miguel on YouTube. I posted a link in the show notes, of course, of this episode for you to be able to find him and all of the awesome photography education that he has on his YouTube channel. Speaking of which, now that I think about it, it is April, of course, which means that there is a new theme for Photo Minute Monday in the group. So this month, we're talking all about exposure. So last month, we talked all about composition. Every Monday, I put out a new video about composition, you know, when to know what to use and what compositions that you should be trying out as a new photographer and focusing on. This month, it is all about exposure. So things like, what is exposure? How do you change exposure? What is the correct exposure? These types of things in just little short, bite-sized, quick videos for you to consume, think about, and then put into practice. So if you want to learn more about exposure and getting, you know, better photos, then feel free to come on into the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook community by just searching Beginner Photography Podcast on Facebook, and you will find it right there. Go ahead, come on in, join us. We would love to have you. So that is it for this week. Until next week, I want you to keep shooting. Just shoot as much as you can. Capture things that you didn't know that you wanted to capture or think that you could capture. Just start shooting, because the more that you shoot, the better that you will learn. All right, that is it. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Beginner Photography Podcast. If you enjoy the show, consider leaving a review in iTunes. Keep shooting, and we'll see you next week.
You know, I try to be as honest as possible when I answer these questions, and I think, you know, that's good and bad sometimes, because
why is that? There are.
Well, it's bad to some extent where, like, people kind of want you to embellish a little bit, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like when you get to a certain point in your career, you know, I think people kind of like, they want you to embellish a little bit, and they almost are like disappointed when you're just like, meh, I just do basic stuff, you know, and that you really believe it, you know. And it's like they're like, but no, like they want you to be something that you're not really trying to be. And so to some extent, like that can hinder you, but you know, it's what I believe, and it's the way I feel. And it's just like, I'm not about trying to be somebody I'm not, or put myself out there as being more than what I actually am. Like, I just do what I do, you know. Some people vibe with it and go with it, and other people are just like, ah, he's too basic. I'm like, that's fine too.